We're talking with Jonathan Dover, a retired member of the Navajo Rangers, who investigated a range of really strange stuff, regular crimes as well, but skinwalkers, UFOs, orbs, Bigfoot, hauntings, all happening in proximity to each other on the in the Navajo Nation. Very similar to the level of activity that's been reported at a place we call Skinwalker Ranch. In this half hour, I will go to the phones, and you can join in and join the conversation, ask a couple of questions of my guest. There's a couple of things I want to cover, though, first. So if you're going to call in, we will get to your calls in about 15, 20 minutes. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. You know, Jonathan, when I first started trying to get some information about skinwalkers, it was tough. There wasn't a whole lot that you could count on as being reliable. And now, of course, it's a term that's known much broader. Tony Hillerman had written a book that became a TV movie called Skinwalker. And I think, I don't know if you know this, but Louis L'Amour wrote a book called The Haunted Mesa, which L'Amour, a great Western writer, had many friends and lived with the tribes for a long time and had an understanding of religion and beliefs. The book I co-wrote, Hunt for the Skinwalker, has been around for a while. There are other books that have stemmed from that. There was a film, a documentary film of the same title, and now there's a TV series. The term gets tossed around a lot. And I think probably Anglos, the rest of us who are not a member of the tribe, don't take it all that seriously. It's like superstition, it's mythology. But a lot of the people who've ended up going to Skinwalker Ranch learn to take it seriously because not only do they have experiences there, but it follows them home. And they call it hitchhikers. And I wonder, does this make sense to you that something like that could happen?
Oh yeah, it's actually happened to us during a haunting case that Stan investigated. He had 64 coins over two nights that apported or just materialized out of thin air and came flying across the room, bounced off the walls, hit the floor, spun around, rolled. He called me up. He was very shocked, and he says, "What I do?" And I says, "Well, you're an investigator. You know, you're going to have to photograph, document, and collect." And one thing we noticed was that out of all the 64 coins that appeared over 2 days, every one of them landed heads up, which is a statistical impossibility.
As I said, the story about the ranch is that there is a curse, that the Navajo put a curse on the Utes, well-deserved from all historical accounts. Can something like that be lifted? Can someone come along and say, all right, all's forgiven, we're taking the curse off?
I believe it could be lifted. However, there's an aspect that a lot of people don't realize. Over a lot of time, you had medicine men who I would consider general practitioners. They knew a lot. Today, you have more like an eye, nose, and throat specialist. Some of them only do one or two ceremonies out of all the possibilities that there are for many different types of ceremonies. And so the knowledge is now fragmented. So with medicine men, you know, a lot of them are learning how to be a medicine man late in life, and there's not enough time to learn everything. So I think that culturally, a lot of that information is disappearing, and some of that information has to stop this thing may have already gone.
Could you help me understand sort of the Native American connection? And by connection, I mean hotspots. For example, Skinwalker Ranch, the Uinta Basin, it's always been a hotspot, a multiple different kinds of what we call paranormal or supernatural or certainly unexplained phenomena, all in the same general place, Skinwalker Ranch being an example of it. Four Corners, the Navajo Reservation, Yakima, Washington, Sedona, Arizona, Dulce, New Mexico. Why all this kind of stuff seems concentrated in those places? The one common denominator is the strong Native American or tribal presence.
In fact, you have tribes down in southern Arizona, living right near the Estrella mountain range. The Estrellas, actually in the language of that tribe, means Stargate. And I find that very interesting. The Hopis have traditions where they're able to fly in gourds and miniaturize themselves. And I actually had a woman come to me and say that she had a gourd land in her yard, and she put a circle of corn pollen around it. And she says little Hopis came out and were screaming at her to get rid of that line. After a while, she broke the line, and they got back in the gourd and took off. So there's a lot of information out there, just of things that have happened. That different tribes have similar type things going on. The shape changer is something that's almost universal, not only in the United States of different tribes, but also with other cultures in different countries.
The little people is something that I had heard when I was first poking around in the Uinta Basin, that the tribal people, when I finally got their trust enough to talk to me about it, told me stories about these little tiny beings that would sometimes even appear inside their house, and I didn't know what to make of it.
Yeah, and we've had a lot of those appear in people's houses out here too, and were surprised by the homeowners and scrambled out an open window. So, you know, that kind of stuff happens a lot too.
There's one other story I want you to talk about before we open up the phone lines, and it's about this orb case that you investigated. I guess the MUFON STAR team came in as well, and it's a great case just as a UFO case, but it delves off into a lot of other strange stuff, a 4-foot-tall rabbit and other phenomena. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, a young lady was lives in Loop, where I live. She's coming home late at night from working in Flagstaff, so it's about 1 o'clock in the morning. She's driving along and she sees what she describes as a bright red light in the sky, near one of the what they call a crater. It's actually a cinder cone from a volcanic vent, and there's a bunch of them in this area. And she looks at it and says, I wonder what a helicopter is doing up there, because it's just sitting there, it's not moving. As she drives past and she's still watching it, it starts coming down off of this cinder cone, kind of angling toward her vehicle. She gets up near the reservation line. It makes a right-hand turn right there. So you have to get your eyes back on the road. She goes over the cattle guard. She's going down the road. She looks to the side, to the left-hand side, and she sees now that this orb has gone from this big red orb to a little orb, a little smaller, she says, a little smaller than a volleyball, but bigger than a softball. And she says it's flying along the just above the stripe on the side of the road. So she's watching it. She takes her cell phone out. She tries to take a video of it, but it won't show up in the viewfinder. But she looks out the window and she can see the road in the viewfinder. After a while, it suddenly speeds up, zips in front of her, and makes a sharp right angle turn instantaneously and shoots up into the sky. She's looking over her steering wheel and watching it, and she says it's going across the sky like a shooting star. She thinks that's it. Gets home and pulls into her driveway, and she parks on the dirt. Because there's a car on the pavement. And as she pulls in, there's this 3.5 to 4 foot tall rabbit sitting there. She says that it has no markings. It's kind of a brown and black speckled fur. It has black eyes. Its ears are to together, like they're pressed together and angled back from the head. And it's just sitting there. It comes up to the hood of her car. As she pulls in, the first thing she says to herself is, "Oh no, I'm onto you, rabbit." And she stopped. She calls her brother who's in Phoenix and starts telling him what she's seeing. And she says, okay, she talks to him for about 15, 20 minutes. And then she says, "I'm going to make a run for the house." She says, if you don't hear from me or if the phone goes out, call somebody. And she opens the door. She steps backwards and goes around the back of the vehicle and races into the house. The next day, she stays up all night, of course. Next day, she gets a migraine. She's never had a migraine in her life. And so a lot of the people that I've talked to, including the investigators, tell me that what she experienced was what they call a screenshot memory, that this is actually a possible EBE or alien, and that they put something in your mind so that you're seeing something that looks perfectly normal, but different, like a large butterfly, an owl, a deer, something that's not going to be, you know, totally freak you out.
Is this the same lady who sees a little girl standing in the snow or standing in the dark?
Yeah, later on, this is kind of a few years later, she's leaving her house, and on the corner across the street from her, she's seeing a figure of a little girl standing in the snow at 4 a.m. when it's still dark. And she's looking like, you know, this is crazy. You know, what's a little girl doing out here? But she said that in the snow, there's no footprints, nothing there that this little girl could come from. And then she looked back and the girl was gone.
And in this orb case, there was some physical evidence that was retrieved from the vehicle, right?
Yeah, one of the STAR team members asked me to, and this is a scientist, said pull the oil filter from the car, and we're going to send it in and have it tested. The testing that came back was that there was a large spike of sodium nitrite. This is the same stuff you get in hot dog water. And they couldn't account for it because sodium nitrite is not a normal byproduct of oil, nor is it a byproduct of the filter.
Was there something on the hood of the car? There was something detected on the hood of the car, a magnetic anomaly of some kind? Or the roof of the car?
Yeah, we did. We were told to take a compass and walk around the car. From 3 feet away, the compass pegged on an area just in front of the passenger door. There was another area that it pinned to on the other side, just behind the driver's door. If you took a string and put a line between the two, it went right through the seat and through the driver.
Yeah, that's a heck of a case. Let's take a couple of calls, and if we have time, we'll come back to that one because there's so much other detail that we haven't had a chance to touch on, but I know there are a lot of folks on the lines that want to talk to you. We're going to start with JD in Indianapolis. Good morning, JD.
Good morning, Mr. Knapp, and I want to congratulate you on your really great bumper songs. Really great bumper songs.
Thanks.
My question for Jonathan. Jonathan, why would anyone want to become a skinwalker considering the horrible sacrifice? And question two, have you heard of any healing UFOs?
Okay, for the first question, people do it because there's power involved. when you can control a whole community because of fear, that's power. And some people like that. Other people become disillusioned with organized religion and their life in general, and want to do something just to get at people or get at enemies, perceived enemies that they might have. And in some cases, small children that come upon these meetings of these skinwalkers are told, you have a choice. You either die, or you tell us, do you want your brother or your sister to die? And we'll teach you. So, you know, that to me is pretty horrifying. Let's see, the second question, if there was any
healings. Any healings, yeah, with UFOs.
I haven't seen any. We've had a lot of experience with them, a lot of sightings, but no, we haven't seen any healing as a result of any encounters.
Thanks for the call. First-time caller, Paul in Lubbock, Texas. Hi, Paul. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, how's it going, guys? So I just, a quick comment. First, I went down to the Navajo Nation about 2 years ago for a mission trip, and what an experience it was for me. But the weirdest thing that I never understood, I mean, still till today, is, you know, meeting with a bunch of Christians out there on the nation, you know, one of the first things we were warned about, almost like a military briefing, was beware the skinwalkers. This is what to look for. Don't mention them. Don't talk about them. But we're telling you so that way you know not to mess with them. And, you know, again, messing with or going out there and being around Christians on the nation, it was just really strange to me how all that went.
Jonathan, so how does it all fit together? You can be a Christian and believe that skinwalkers are real. There's no conflict between seemingly different spiritual beliefs.
The skinwalker is a real person. They can be shot and killed. And I've had relatives that have actually shot them and killed them. So it's something that is real, but it's a very taboo subject, because to mention them, to even bring up the name, is to draw attention to yourself and be asking for a curse to be leveled against you. So it's something that's considered very dangerous, and that's why nobody talks about it. They have had incidents with federal court system where people that have killed a skinwalker were taken to trial and eventually acquitted back in the 70s. So this thing is real. It's a real thing. But it will offend people, and they will not talk to you if you start mentioning them or start asking about them. Because it is so evil out here to even bring it up.
Paul, thank you for that call. We're going to go to a break in our final segment. We'll take more of your calls from my guest, Jonathan Dover of the Navajo Rangers. A lot more still to come here on Coast to Coast. We're talking with Jonathan Dover. Fascinating conversation about his experiences as a Navajo Ranger, all the strange cases he investigated, trying to help us understand some of these concepts that of paranormal, supernatural, call it what you will, how they might fit together. We'll go back to the phone lines in just a moment with in our final segment of Coast to Coast AM. Jonathan, before we go back to the phones, I want to ask you about Navajo Nation now. I've read some news stories about a large number of COVID cases on the Navajo lands and reservation. And I wanted you to give me your assessment of how things are going. Is it because there's a lot of tests that there are a lot of cases, or is it locked down? How are things going?
Well, right now, everything on the weekends, everything's locked down. There is no travel. Even the stores, the gas stations are shut down. Currently, the latest is there are 3,912 cases on the Navajo Nation of coronavirus. and with 140 deaths. So this is something that is being taken very seriously. There are there's much more testing being done. They're testing on a scale similar to what you would see in even higher than New York and New Jersey. And so we think that when the states, surrounding states, start testing, because it's about 9 to 10 times higher than the surrounding states, they're going to find out that the incidence is just as high in the states, and that number is probably going to level out.
I know in these gigantic spending bills that were approved by Congress, signed into law, there were billions of dollars set aside for tribes. That was weeks ago. And then I read subsequent stories that promises were made but not kept. That wouldn't be the first time. Do you know, have the tribes been provided any financial aid in these relief bills?
The tribe actually, along with other tribes, sued government to release that money. And lately, when Trump came to Arizona to do do some stumping for politics, he showed up in Arizona and he promised at that time that he would release $600 million to the Navajo Nation. Of course, everybody over here just said, yeah, right, you know, we'll believe that when we see it. The very next week, the money was released. And so now they're using that money for what it was intended for, which is to provide the infrastructure to help out.
Prior to this virus, the pandemic, you know, I had read the stories about the gigantic coal plant that was closed down. It's terrible economic consequences as a big employer on the reservation, but probably really good for anybody who likes to breathe air. I heard about that, and then also heard about uranium mining and how it might affect the people downriver and the water supply. And are you up on that, either of those?
Oh, yeah. The mining disaster that they had, they were trying to inspect a former mine, and they opened it up, and the thing just blew out. And so now down the San Juan River, they're having radioactive material drifting down through the San Juan, which is never a good idea. And that affects a lot of the farms up that way. So there's a direct impact. We also have uranium mines from the 60s and 70s. They were getting weapons-grade uranium out of the ground over here in the form of uranium logs. And many of those tailing pits are still open and just sitting there contaminating everything around them.
We go back to the phones. We'll go west of the Rockies. Joseph in West Texas. Hi, Joseph. You're on Coast to Coast with Jonathan Dover.
Yes. Just very quickly, Becca, my grandfather was a shaman, so I'm a skeptic, but I'm very open-minded, and I do my research, and I'm respectful, which I believe all skeptics should be. Anyway, my driving through Arizona on I-8 towards Casa Grande, in the middle of the night, my girlfriend was driving. She saw a hitchhiker on the side of the road, and of course, she said, she just, don't look, don't look, don't look. So I peek out the side of the window, and I see a figure running next to us. It is like a jackalope, but a man in a jackalope, and a jackalope skin. And he was running, and he turned to look, and his eyes were red. And I just watched him, and I maybe watched each other. He was very graceful. And then he just stopped, and I looked in the rearview mirror, and I see a figure, again, just standing on the side of the road. I said, okay, well, what did I see? And she said, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it until we get home. Okay. So I look it up, and I was wondering, they said there's white ceremonial paint. Does the paint or the costume undergo any kind of ceremony or ritual in order to help a skinwalker, or is it a spell, or does the paint and the skin have anything to do with it? Does it help?
The skin actually allows them to turn into an animal form. The paint, we're not sure about as far as if it actually does something or if it's just part of how you'd say a uniform, because skinwalkers out here are so feared that, and there's a universal description almost. Other tribes have them. White Mountain Apaches, some of the Apache tribes down there toward Tucson, they have skinwalkers also. I don't know the particulars about them. I've heard them being seen all the way over in Snowflake and Sholo and in Flagstaff. So there are many different types. I believe what you saw was probably one of them from one of the local tribes down there.
So white paint, is that a common thing? They paint themselves and that's part of the transformation process?
Yes, yes. And then there's a series of rituals that they go through and chants. Also, in talking with actual people who have been doing this, they told me that when you change form, the shift, the background shift, everything turns red and everything gets blurry, and you can travel very, very fast and for long distances.
Joseph, thanks for that call and for sharing that story. Sounds like you might have seen something pretty special. You know, when I started down this road, it was Colm Kelleher, Bob Bigelow allowed me to be on the ranch and learning about the skinwalker phenomena. And they, you know, they've had consequences themselves, as have many other people who've been to that property. You mentioned, Jonathan, that after this program is over, you're going to do a sort of a cleansing. Does that work? Is it protection?
It works for me, and Stan does it too. Stan also has a friend of his that's a remote healer. Stan has been attacked a lot more than I have. And if you can imagine something like a knife being shoved into the back of your head or into your back and just twisted constantly, and then he gets a hold of his buddy and he goes through a remote healing thing for him. For me, I'm able to do the smudging and cleansing, and that seems to help, although I'm always very wary about things around me, probably from being a cop for so long.
We're going to go to Mel in the Mojave Desert. Hi, Mel. What's on your mind?
It's a real pleasure to address Mr. Dover. I've followed him for quite a while. I'd like to know if he has any stories regarding unusually large black feline-type animals, cats, for lack of a better term, something almost the size of a mountain lion, something way out of place that doesn't fit in.
Okay. I was on patrol in a place called the Newlands, which is just south of Sanders, Arizona. And I actually saw a black jaguar jumping over the tumbleweeds, trying to catch a rabbit or some other rodent down there. And he was completely black, had his coat was very shiny, but he had spots on him underneath that were brighter as far as how shiny they were. And I informed our game and fish biologist, and he just told me, there's no such thing. We don't have any black jaguars, but I can say I've seen them. So we know that one was living down that way.
Mel, sounds like maybe you saw one too.
Now, my description is different as far as a species would go. I understand what Mr. Dover is saying about jaguar. This one was more like a lynx. Like a Canadian lynx, except extremely large, and it had those the pointed ears that go straight up and the tassels that hung over, and it had fairly long hair, like a couple of inches long, you know, and it was solid black, even on the underside. And this was down in the Joshua Tree area. We've talked about that before, you know, when you've been on. And that was my experience, and it's always stuck with me, and it was very strange. It didn't behave normally. I stopped on the side of the road and looking at it, just sitting there, and you'd think it would run off, but it didn't. It just sat there. And the night got stranger, but I know this is a short time here. And then I had an encounter just about a half hour with another animal, except it was in the canine type variety, and it came up in my camp.
Same night?
Pardon?
Same night.
Like a half hour later. If you want me to continue, I'll tell you.
You know what? I think I'll get Jonathan's comment, and then we'll move on. But
okay,
thanks for the call,
I'd
Mel.
Like to call
thanks.
In and talk about that one with you some night.
All right, Mel. Thank you. Jonathan, so did these things generally happen in bunches? So one thing happens, and then it's followed by something else. In a lot of the cases that you've investigated, that is what happens, right?
Yeah. Just unusual things, things out of the ordinary. We see that kind of stuff all the time. We hear about it a lot. People come up to us and they tell us, oh, it's the Rangers. We don't mind talking to you.
Huh.
And they'll tell us these things. And we've had police officers tell us a lot of these things that happen to them. Although they tell us, don't tell anybody, you know, that we told you this.
Yep. Mark in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hi, Mark.
How you doing, George? Great show tonight. I'm loving it.
Thank you.
Quick question for Jonathan. Are you familiar with US 550 that runs from Bernalillo to Farmington?
I think I've been on that road a number of times.
And I drive that road. I'm a truck driver, and I'm on that road about twice a week going from Utah. And I used to take my dog with me to there, and I've taken him all over the country, and he always stays in the back of the sleeper. He's a big German Shepherd, kind of lazy. But whenever we get on that road, he gets anxious and sits in the front seat. Well, one day I stopped to let him go to the bathroom, probably, in between Cuba, maybe 50 miles north of Cuba, New Mexico there. I always get kind of a weird sense of dread and anxious a little bit through there. Have you had cases or sighted? It drives my dog nuts, and he ran off one day for, like, it took me almost an hour to get him back to the truck, and I could not see what he was going after, and he doesn't chase animals at home, and I was just wondering, have you had any cases over in that area?
We have had cases over in that area, and animals, dogs especially, are very, very sensitive to things that we can't see or can't comprehend. And you learn to rely on them if there's something going on. Pay attention to your dog, because he's trying to tell you something.
Mark, thank you for that call. And Farmington, by the way, if you know your UFO history, was the site of an amazing, dramatic, well-documented encounter. The whole town came out. The sky was filled with UFOs. It's quite a long time ago, but you might want to look that one up. Try to get one more quick call in. We're going to New York. Mayad, how you doing? Good morning.
Morning, gentlemen. Excellent show. It's Mayad. I think you got it correct.
Yes.
First of all, a brief comment. The framing is not more tests and more cases. We heard that recently, but it's 50 states that's trying to coordinate it instead of centralize, unlike Australia, Taiwan, South Korea, et cetera. But my question is there any history of plant substance, such as entheogen, meaning God-evoking alternate experience reality in the Navajo, and what are the shamans saying in terms of what we're experiencing and what the future, the medicine then, any prophecies? And I'll listen over the air. Thank you.
For that, I'm not aware of too many prophecies involving that. Boy, I know that, Hopi has a lot of prophetic stuff going on up there. But as far as Navajo, I'm not sure.
Do Navajo use peyote or substances like that in medicine man type activities?
Traditional medicine men do not use it. However, they have the Native American Church up here, NAC, and they have roadmen, and they practice peyote.
Thanks to all of our callers. Jonathan, in the minute we've got left, is the you're gone, and your former partner is still there, but is he still working on this, or is somebody else taking over for you?
After I left, the program kind of died out. The chief ranger retired, and they have a new chief ranger up there now. And so there is the occasional call in for that kind of stuff still, and it's still investigated, but not on the level that we were doing it when we first got going with it.
So when you started, I mean, you were the primary guys, but other officers would also handle cases, I guess, given how many there must have been.
Yeah, and you have to understand that for 27,000 square miles, at the time there were only 15 rangers. I think right now they're down to 12.
Oh, my gosh. Jonathan Dover, it's a terrific conversation. Can't thank you enough for being here for the 3 hours, and I look forward to continuing our conversation off the air.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you, and thank you for your wonderful fans out there.
All right, thanks a lot. Jonathan Dover, Navajo Rangers, what a terrific guest. I want to thank my colleagues there at Coast to Coast, Michael Cosio and Donna Walker. Our webmaster tonight is Tim Binall, Dan Galani, and Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. I'll be back tomorrow night. Nick Redfern and Nick Cook. Good night, everyone.